Okay, are you ready for the quantum wave of hype? Everything quantum. Well, Trump signed two executive orders yesterday that are designed to, well, accelerate the development of quantum computers inside the United States. The first order focuses on how we can deploy quantum computers that can engage in scientific research. And then the second order basically is more of a defensive order that directs government and security experts to prepare for these quantum systems, which can, of course, decrypt rather quickly, you know, encrypted communications, things like that. So today I'm going to give you my interpretation of what this is all about and why Trump is pushing these EOs all of a sudden. Now remember that the EOs are not binding in law. They're just executive orders. They're basically just Trump saying, I hope you will do these things. Please do these things. And, you know, that probably won't happen. The real incentive here is from the private corporations that are involved in this research and technology, which we'll get to, you know, from Google and IBM and Microsoft, etc. The incentive for them is a profit incentive and also a market domination incentive, which we'll get to here in a second. And we also have to talk about Q Day. What is Q Day? And nothing to do with QAnon, thank God. It has to do. Q Day is the day that there's advanced enough computing systems, you know, quantum computers, that can break most of the crypto wallet encryption. That day is still a few years away, estimated to be sometime before 2032. 2030 is typically said to be the, you know, the year of Q Day, but no one knows for sure. Still a lot of problems to solve between now and then. But let's back up here. Let's get a big picture view of what is quantum computing really, and what's it good for? Because it's not good for most things, actually. It's really good at certain things. And with those narrow applications, it's much better than classical computing by orders of magnitude. But for most things, it's really not that useful. However, it is good at breaking cryptographic messages through, you know, factoring and solving, you know, Shor's algorithm and things like that. So it can break encrypted keys, but it can't do that until, you know, a few years later. But what it can do is, well, the NSA can hoover up all of the traffic on the internet, which of course it is doing, including your encrypted emails. You're encrypted, let's say, when you're accessing your bank account on a web page, all that's encrypted, all that traffic. Well, the NSA is recording all that traffic. Right. So any kind of web page activity that you think is cryptographically secured, it is for now, but the NSA has a copy of it. So they're harvesting today, and then they're going to be able to decrypt all of that in a few years. Yeah, right? Isn't that horrifying? So everything that you think is cryptographically secure today won't be a few years later. They can retroactively hack and break all of your bank transactions and all of your crypto wallets and all of your web page and your VPN usage and, you know, everything. Now, don't freak out about that, because these quantum computers won't be incredibly common at first. They will be extremely expensive to operate because they require extreme cooling. You have to actually get them so cold that they're colder than Lindsey Graham's heart, apparently, or colder than the background radiation of outer space. How about that? Very, very cold. That requires an enormous amount of energy and, you know, refrigeration equipment. Once you have them very, very cold, then you can run them at relatively little cost. They hardly use any electricity during the run to solve problems. But because of the enormous cost of building these systems and cooling them, governments and corporations will have a priority of targets. to decrypt. So that probably doesn't include you logging into your bank account on a web page in the year 2026. Even though they will have that information, they're not going to spend their money and time, you know, decrypting your, you know, your bank transfers or whatever. Unless you're involved in some kind of high level, you know, espionage or criminal activity or something that the government wants, then you're probably not going to be targeted. However, there are legitimate concerns about attacks on, you know, Bitcoin, for example. Although that's still many years away. I wouldn't worry about it yet. I will warn you about it as we get closer. And you probably shouldn't be using Bitcoin anyway because the ledger is fully transparent. You should be using, you know, private crypto if you're using crypto at all. All right, let's talk about another application of quantum computing. And this is actually the best application, is simulating quantum systems. So the thing that quantum computers do really well is they, you know, they behave in quantum-like fashion. And so they can simulate quantum systems. Now, what are quantum systems? Well, technically we're all quantum systems, but especially when you get down to much smaller sizes, you know, you get down to, let's say, microns or, you know, nanometer scale or smaller. And we're talking about molecules, we're talking about chemicals, and even atomic, you know, various atomic phenomena. These can be simulated by quantum computer systems at a fraction of the time and cost of classical computing. And so, when you think about, you know, what are some very difficult, you know, molecular problems or atomic problems that need to be solved? You know, a lot of things immediately come to mind. You know, battery chemistry, right? I talk about battery chemistry a lot. Wouldn't it be great to have a simulator that just simulates the battery chemistry so you don't have to actually keep building it with different elements and testing each element? You can build a simulated quantum battery world, and believe me, they're going to do this. And then you can test all the different elements from the entire table of elements in the battery simulated world, and it will, you know, pop out the answer. Oh, this is what you need to use, you know, bismuth or whatever. Probably bismuth, you know, who knows? I'm just guessing. But molecules, like what other kinds of things are of interest when you're talking about molecules? Well, you know, advanced materials, like, you know, carbon nanotube structures, drug discovery, you know, medicine, etc. I would use it to study plant medicine or natural medicine, things like that. But the Western medical system will use it to develop new drugs that they'll sell to you at 10,000% markups, of course. But, you know, any kind of chemical reaction, even, interestingly, even nuclear reactions. So maybe you could use these quantum systems to simulate what's called LENR, which is low-energy nuclear reactions, different from fission, different from hot fusion, etc. There could be a lot of breakthroughs made with this kinds of technology. So the quantum computer systems are, you know, they're horrible at running spreadsheets and calculations. They're horrible at running code. You're not going to run your Python code on a quantum system. You're going to use it for drug discovery, you know, molecular simulations, factoring, you know, complex cryptographic keys. What else? Any kind of complex mathematical problems, sometimes the scaling of those problems can be reduced significantly based on what kind of problem it is. So if you can take, let's say you can take an exponential complexity curve and you can convert it to be quadratic. Or maybe you could take a quadratic complexity curve and you can make it linear. You know, things like that. That's what quantum computing can do very well, depending on, you know, the mathematical problem that you are approaching, which some of this could involve machine learning and AI and AI model training and things like that. So these are going to be sold as specialized accelerators, kind of like a GPU that you might have right now in your computer, you know, to run AI models. You might one day have a QPU, you know, a quantum processing unit. and they'll probably call it a QPU, you know? So you have a GPU to do all your inference and all your image generation and everything, and then you'll have a QPU to do, you know, your quantum, your specialized quantum things. And this will become commonplace, but at first, of course, it'll be a relatively small number of qubits. And a qubit is like a bit in a classical computer, except it's a quantum bit. And I'm not going to get too geeky on it here, but you know how in a regular classical computer, a bit can only hold either a 0 or a 1, and that's it? And not both, obviously, or what would be the purpose? You know, it only holds a 0 or a 1. Well, a qubit can hold a 0 and a 1 and everything in between all at the same time, which doesn't make sense, but it's the quantum world. So let me explain it this way. It's a simple way. You know, the early computers were 8-bit systems. They only had 8 bits. So 2 to the power of 8 is 256, which means that in one, what's called a word, which is a, you know, it's 8 bits together. That's called a word. One word could represent one value from 0 to 255, and that's it. But only one value at a time, you know. If all the bits are on, if all the bits are ones, then that's 255. If all the bits are off, then that's 0. And then depending on the bits, on and off and on and off, it's something in between 0 and 255. Got it? Or if you go, you know, 2 to the power of 16, 16-bit systems, then you get 65,536 possible combinations, right? Modern computing, like Windows and Mac systems, are 64 bits, which is, of course, a much larger number. But in quantum computing, if you had 8 qubits, those 8 qubits can hold all values from 0 to 255 at the same time, superimposed upon each other, technically existing in 2 to the power of 8 alternate universes. So essentially, you have 256 universes. I mean, we'll use that term. Okay, I mean, maybe that's not the right term. Dimensions, maybe? I don't know. 256 different alternate parallel dimensions, and then these qubits have all their representations projected into those 256 dimensions. And then when you ask this system a problem, I'm simplifying it obviously, but when you ask it to solve a mathematical problem, it basically assesses your problem in all those 256 dimensions. This is for an 8-bit problem. And then it finds the solution and pulls it back into this world. So it grabs one of the alternate dimensions, pulls it into this world, and then represents that in the qubits, which, depending on the hardware, you know, is represented in spin states or things like that. Let me check my notes here. Trapped ion technology. Let's see. Photonic technology. Neutral atom. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to hold qubits, and there's a lot of error correction involved in this because the qubits tend to not want to behave because they've been playing around all these other 256 dimensions, and then they come back into this world and they want to go back to the other dimensions. So there's a lot of errors. So you have to use a lot of error correction in the qubits. Let's see, IBM has a 156-qubit processor called Heron. They deployed that in IBM Quantum System 2. November of 2025, they introduced Nighthawk, a 120-qubit processor. Wow, that's a big deal. And then they have another qubit proof-of-concept chip that they literally call Loon. Yeah, okay, they called it Loon. I didn't call it Loon. Let's see. Google has its Willow chip, which is 105 qubits. Let's see. That has below threshold error correction. See, I was talking about error correction. They've been testing larger arrays of 7x7 grids of encoded qubits. That's interesting. That's in order to reduce the error rate. Let's see. What else do we have here? So Google, IBM, IonQ, Microsoft, oh, and D-Wave. I remember covering D-Wave a few years ago. They claim to have 5,000 plus physical qubits, but that's not the same as logical qubits, in case you're keeping track. They have to cluster physical qubits into logical qubits, so I'm not sure, you know, 5,000 physical qubits might only be, I don't know, maybe 500 logical qubits. I'm not exactly sure. But anyway, there are a lot of companies working on this, and they've got different approaches, and they all have problems. They all have a lot of problems, actually. They have cooling problems. They have error problems. They have, you know, gating problems, all kinds of things. So if you thought AI hallucinations were bad, wait till you start using a quantum computer. You know, your QPU on your desktop, that thing will hallucinate from alternate dimensions. Way worse than an AI system. Seriously, it'll bring back answers. Like, that must be the answer. It's a quantum computer. And it grabs some answer from, you know, dimension number like 2 to the 16th minus 45 or something. And like, that's the wrong dimension. Bad answer. Yeah, that's going to happen. All right, so anyway, that's coming. You're going to hear a lot of hype about quantum. It's going to be kind of like the dot-com boom at some point. Like, everything's going to be quantum, you know? Oh, my. Now, let's get into breaking encryption, because I mentioned earlier how quantum computers can take, let's say, exponential complexity functions, and they can make them more, you know, logarithmic on a more shallow curve, right? Or in some cases, they can make things linear. Well, this is also true in the way that quantum computing can break RSA encryption. So RSA encryption, which is used in, you know, VPNs, it's used in web browsing, the HTTPS, S means secure. That's all RSA encryption. Typically, as low as 128 bits, more commonly 256 or 512 bits. If you're doing so-called military-grade encryption, you might choose 1024 or 2048, something like that. Well, this kind of encryption will be broken by quantum systems, but not immediately, like I said before. So apparently, Bitcoin will be exposed eventually, but it's going to take thousands of logical qubits. My research says here over 4,000 qubits. We're nowhere near that yet, okay? So that's why so-called Q-Day is probably a few years out. There are stronger, more quantum-resistant cryptographic algorithms, such as AES, which is a good idea to use if you have a choice. It's a symmetric encryption algorithm. You can greatly harden that algorithm by just increasing your key length, your decryption keys. So keep that in mind. If you ever have any choice from here forward about encrypting anything, you should always choose more bits and longer keys from here forward. I mean, that's one practical takeaway from this discussion today. More bits, more longer keys, because that will mean it will take more years before the government or corporate systems can break the encryption that protects whatever system you're talking about. So if you've got all your super secret crypto wallet wrapped up in a, you know, some kind of encrypted zip file or something, make sure you use the maximum number of encryption bits. And then that will protect you for longer. So a part of one of the EOs signed by Trump directs the NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, to standardize so-called quantum-resistant algorithms. And so some of those already exist, of course, and they're going to be rolling those out. If you hear about that in the coming years, if it's something that you can use in maybe your company or your crypto, you know, your Bitcoin wallets or your email or whatever, you should definitely say yes to stronger cryptographic, you know, algorithms that are quantum resistant. So there will be even maybe software add-ons and layers or packages that you can buy probably at some point where you can add, well, I'm pretty sure you can buy them now. You can add more quantum decryption resistant layers of encryption to whatever you're doing. So that's something to keep in mind. But remember, I, you know, it's good to have basic protection, for sure. You don't want somebody to be able to snoop on your emails or your web activity in plain text. But I also think that for most people, you don't need military-grade encryption because you're probably not doing something that's on the radar as being interesting enough for the government to expend vast resources to find out, you know, that you were chatting, you know, with somebody, you know, a friend, a family member, whatever. Oh, yeah, they're not going to spend $100,000 to find out what was in your chat log. You know what I mean? Probably not. Again, unless you're somehow tied to something that the government is extremely interested in. Now, one thing that's really interesting to me is about quantum communications or quantum key distribution, because you can use this kind of technology to know when someone else, when a third party is snooping on your communication. So this is a way to secure communications to make absolutely certain that no one else is monitoring them. And this has to do with the entanglement of the photons, I believe. This works really well with optical communications, at least that's my understanding of it. I'm not an expert in this area, but this is my overall understanding. So you can imagine that this is going to be used a lot by the military and government offices and things like that. There's also quantum navigation systems that can use quantum level inertial detection that are ridiculously accurate, that can bypass the need for GPS navigation. So this kind of technology could be used in things like cruise missiles, for example, or, you know, hypersonic missiles. So even if GPS is lost, if that signal's lost, these systems can self-navigate using these quantum inertial systems, which will also be used in outer space, you know, rocket ships, spaceships, things like that. But I'm really curious about what elements are needed to build things like, you know, a quantum inertial sensing system. I bet that you're going to need all those elements that we talk about all the time. You're going to need some, you know, indium. You're going to need some gallium. You're going to need some dysprosium, etc. And guess what? China's got the chokehold on all of those. So it doesn't matter if you have the world's most amazing quantum technology. If you can't get the elements to build the hardware, you're still screwed, you know? Unless you can go into some alternate universe and find an alternate supply of dysprosium. You know, I found it in universe number, you know, 76. Bring it back. Good luck with that. Barring that, you're going to need to get it from China. And China is restricting all this stuff for obvious reasons. But, you know, China's going to build systems with this. They're going to build extremely sensitive, you know, quantum-based magnetometers and things like that, where they can detect submarines under the ocean from satellites. I forgot to add. So from a Chinese satellite, they'll be able to spot every U.S. submarine in every ocean anywhere on the planet. And that may exist right now, actually. I'm not sure. But basically, this is going to render stealth aircraft and submarines, any kind of stealth systems in the military, will be obsolete once these quantum systems are, you know, developed and rolled out. And it's just a matter of time, actually. They are going to be rolled out. And by the way, for a lot of these promised applications like drug discovery or simulating molecular interactions, I think that modern day AI systems are better. I mean, these AI systems are available right now. I mean, think about, you know, AlphaFold, protein folding. That was demonstrated years ago. That's just, you know, one interesting problem at a molecular level, a structural level. But AI systems can do a lot of these tasks quite well right now. It's not clear, actually, that quantum computers are going to do these better. Now, mathematically, yeah, there's a lot of math papers and science papers published about quantum computing, but those are all theoretical. What's lacking is really solid engineering. You know, that's where the hard part comes in, and that's why these companies like Google and IBM and so on are spending who knows how much money on these projects. And, you know, they haven't they haven't changed the world with it. In fact, they don't even have something they can sell commercially yet. I'm sure they will, but so far, no. So the engineering side of this, the actual physical engineering, is absurdly difficult. Perhaps some of the most difficult engineering in the history of our civilization. Whereas the math is solid. Yeah, you know, we can talk about entanglement. We can talk about superposition of states, whatever. But to actually build it and make it work, and then, you know, how do you read the qubits? So suppose the qubits solve the problem. Now you have to detect their current states. You have to, in effect, you have to collapse the wave function to get the answer out of the qubits. How do you do that without screwing up the qubits, right? I don't know. I'm not a quantum computer engineer, but I'm sure that's a difficult problem. And that's probably why you have so much error correction in this, because merely trying to see the answer probably screws with the answer. You know, Schrodinger's cat and all that, right? You open the box and boom, you know, beta decay, the cat's dead. Oh, what happens? We screwed it up. That's probably what they're doing every day with these quantum computers, would be my guess. Okay, one more note in all of this. There's going to be, like I said, a lot of hype about quantum everything. And personally, I think that the word quantum is the wrong word for all of this. I really do. Because if you think about it, it comes from quanta. And quanta means in the realm of physics anyway, in light, it's a discrete unit of, it's a light packet. It's a discrete light packet. Okay, a quanta, or it's the smallest discrete unit of energy that can be characterized in physics. That doesn't match at all what quantum computers do. We're talking about entanglement of multiple qubits, superposition of states, working out problems in multiple dimensions. There's a big sort of voodoo factor in all of that that has nothing to do with discrete packets of energy. In fact, it's absolutely the opposite of discrete. It's all entangled. It's completely entangled. So there's going to be a lot of confusion. For example, in my lab, running mass spectrometry on, you know, testing food for elements and contaminants and so on, we will talk about, you know, quantitation, which just means quant as quantity, but a quantitation of a result means that we have numbers. We can tell you how many parts per billion of lead is in the, you know, ginger root or whatever. So we call that a quantitation test, or just quant for short. So if we're in the lab and somebody says, oh, did you do a quant run on that? That means, do you have numbers? Did you get the actual numbers? Yes, that's a quant run. Well, that could be confusing to a lot of people if you're talking about quantum computing, because there's no quantum computing in the lab. It's really just, you know, mass over charge of an ionized stream of liquid that contains the elements, you know, that kind of thing. The other one is you get quantization in AI models. So quantization is when you change you reduce the amount of RAM that an AI model takes up in the GPU by simplifying or reducing the number of bits that's used to indicate the values of the vectors in the weights that make up the model. So if I say I have what would be a good example? FP8. Okay, that's an 8-bit, it's a floating point 8-bit number that represents each of the weights in the model. So 8 bits, you know, okay, each weight. Now remember, these models might have, let's say, 9 billion parameters. Well, roughly speaking, each one of those parameters, you know, is going to have 8 bits of storage required. So you can do the math, or you can figure out how much storage that takes. And again, yes, I'm oversimplifying this. But if I reduce that to 4 bits, and I do a 4-bit quant model, which is what a lot of people run, then it uses a lot less space, and I can fit a larger model into a GPU, and I can still get usually pretty good results. So a lot of the models that I run are actually 4-bit quants, or 4-bit quantizations of the original model. And the original models are trained almost always in 16 bits, by the way. So by reducing it to 4 bits, I'm using, you know, only 25% of the original storage space, but I still retain typically something like 95% of the accuracy of the original model. And, you know, there are different algorithms for how you distribute the data when you quantize it. There's many different quantization algorithms that are, you know, some of them are more efficient than others and some introduce more errors, etc. Not trying to make this super geeky, but I'm just saying, be careful when people use the prefix quant or quantum, because I just gave you two other examples. You know, quantization in AI doesn't mean quantum computing, and quantitation in laboratory results also doesn't mean quantum computing at all. So you're going to hear a lot of, you know, a lot of quant buzzwords and probably a bunch of IPOs a couple years later. This will be the next wave. You know, this will be like dot-com crash 3.0, you know, a few years down the road after this current crash takes place. And then we'll have like a quantum crash. It'll be a crash in multiple dimensions. That's coming. So just be prepared for that. And you know how a couple years ago when AI first became popular and all of a sudden every software company is like, it's AI, you know, everything, they just slapped an AI label on it, you know, like a clothes washing machine. It's got an AI dirt sensor on it, you know, everything. I have an AI toaster. Everything became AI. It was all BS. It's still all the same thing. They just slap AI on it. Yeah, you're going to see that with quantum also a few years down the road. Everything's going, oh, quantum. Oh, I have a photo editing software app with quantum features. And like, what does that even mean? why do you need quantum Photoshop? What does that even do? But they're gonna slap quantum on everything. You know, quantum battery tech. You know, this is like power from alternate dimensions. So there'll be a lot of hype and buzz as usual. And then the word quantum will get very old very quickly. You're probably already sick of it just from this podcast, actually. I'm sick of it. I've said it too many times. I'm starting not to even like the letter Q at this point. That's how abused the word quantum has become. Well, yeah, flip it around. Make it a P. Okay. In any case, this is what's coming. Trump's executive orders don't mean much, really. The best thing the government can do on this is mostly stay out of the way, and then the U.S. might have a chance, but China has way more engineers, and they have all the rare earths that they need to build the hardware. You know, China's got high-level scientists now. So does Russia, and so does Japan, etc. So does Korea. It's going to be very competitive on quantum computing. So I'm not absolutely convinced that the U.S. will win in this race. In fact, I don't even think the U.S. is going to win the race to superintelligence. But if the U.S. does win the race to quantum computing, it'll only be in one of 256 dimensions. The other 255 will be won by somebody else, probably China, probably. I don't even know how to say quantum in Chinese, actually, come to think of it. Gonna have to learn that. Every time some new thing comes along, I have to learn the words in Chinese. It's like, I just finally remembered robot, you know, Ji Qi Ren. And it's like, no, now I got to learn all this other stuff. Then I thought I learned the word for like laptop computers in Chinese, which is Shou Ti Dian. And then I was told, no, that's the way we used to say it in the 1990s. That's old giant laptops. You don't say it that way anymore. So apparently I've learned all the wrong words, or some wrong words. It never ends. But hey, it's fun for Chinese speakers because talking to me is like traveling in time. Going back to the 1990s, the way Chinese used to be spoken with all those words. Yeah, I still remember them. All right. Anyway, enough said. Okay. The upshot of this, I think I've already covered it, but don't be freaked out about all the hype about quantum computing. This is a very slow-moving field, actually. It's moving much more slowly than AI. We are years away from the quantum computers being able to break all your passwords and everything and all your wallets. Years away from that. And this isn't some of this stuff may never work, frankly. Who knows if they're going to solve the, you know, the physics problems of this, or maybe decades away. We don't know. It's kind of like the way they try to build hot fusion reactors. You know, they say, oh, $50 billion in, and then like, oh, well, we think it'll work by the year 2075. Okay, call me, you know, call me in 2074. We'll figure this out. You know, I'm not sure hot fusion is ever going to work, actually. they have the tokamak reactors there with all the magnetic fields, and then they're trying to create plasma for over unity energy generation, and they can do it for like 1 nanosecond or something, and that's it. And then the fields collapse and the thing melts down, and it took the energy of a small city to do that one thing. Yeah, that's not working. So sometimes this stuff never works. We'll see. By the way, that's why I like solar panels right now, because they're low tech, they're simple, they work. It's like stick them in the sun, you get watts out of them. Okay. I don't have to have like the temperature of the surface of the sun here. All I have to do is just put it in the yard and run the DC wires into an inverter, and it's done. We've got some power. It's not enough power to, you know, travel through time, but it's enough power to, you know, run pumps and run your lights and computers and whatever. So sometimes you just got to go with what's available right now. All right. So anyway, that's what's behind quantum computing. That's my opinion. Again, I'm not an expert in this area. That's just my overall understanding, you know, as a tech person and a scientist, etc. So we'll see where this goes, and I will keep you posted if something changes. In the meantime, you can follow my videos and my interviews at brightvideos.com or my articles and infographics at naturalnews.com. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. You can also check out all of our affiliate deals if you want to help support our platforms and our work. Just go to rangerdeals.com. And there you can find quantum phones. No. De-Googled phones from above phone and satellite phones. And no, I haven't slapped the word quantum on everything there. You know, quantum vitamin D. I remember there's a company that maybe they even still sell this. There's a company that used to sell what they branded raw zinc. Yeah, raw zinc. There was also a company that was selling organic salt. First of all, what's raw about zinc, you know? Does zinc change when you cook it? No. All the zinc is still raw zinc. I mean, it's elemental zinc. It's zinc is zinc. That's why it has its own little square on the table of elements, because even if you cook it, it's still zinc. So I don't know why they're selling raw zinc, or organic salt is the funniest one, because salt, sodium chloride, is actually an inorganic crystalline lattice. I mean, it's the very definition almost of inorganic molecular structures. There's no carbon in there, you know? It's sodium chloride. But this is organic salt. Like, we didn't spray our salt with pesticides. It's like, okay, why would you? You know? But anyway, sorry, I'm getting distracted. RangerDeals.com is where you can find all of our affiliate deals. That includes the therapeutic peptides. That includes the de-Googled phones, which is great for your privacy and security. Plus, Goldbacks and our gold and silver affiliate partner, which is Battalion Metals, that is highly trusted, great pricing, you know, privacy protected, etc. Check them out at metalswithmike.com if you want to take advantage of this lull in the metals pricing. I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'll probably take advantage of it again soon. Anyway, thank you for supporting us, and thank you for your interest in these topics and all the others. Again, I'm Mike Adams. Take care.
Pink Himalayan salt, one of the purest and healthiest salts on Earth. Non-GMO, certified kosher, lab tested and trusted. Shop at healthrangerstore.com.